This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. Today we'll hear about a new plan in Chico to bolster business during reopening by closing some downtown streets to make more room for outdoor dining and events. We'll also head to Plumas and Sierra counties to hear how tourism is causing a dilemma for business owners there who want patrons, but not the increased risk of outsiders possibly bringing COVID into their communities. And we'll check in with the head librarian for Tehama County to hear how libraries there have been engaging with the community throughout the pandemic. If you have questions or comments for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Thursday, June 11th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, the news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. More than 100 Californians died from COVID-19 over the past 24 hours, the California Department of Public Health announced Thursday. That comes following multiple days with significantly fewer deaths. In all, the department recorded 105 deaths across California. Fatalities are currently increasing at a weekly rate of 10.4%. Total fatalities attributed to the coronavirus in California stand at 4,881. The department also recorded a pronounced increase in newly diagnosed cases, 3,090, also the highest in days. The number of confirmed infections in the state is now 139,281, a 16.2 increase over the figure at this time last week. Meanwhile, additional cases are cropping up in the North State, with new cases identified in at least four counties since Wednesday. The number of cases across the 11 counties now stands at 294. At least 13 of the infected are hospitalized. Health officials in Butte County have confirmed 73 cases, Sutter County 69, Shasta County 47, Yuba County 34, Glenn County 23, Siskiyou County 14, Tehama County, a dozen, Lassen County, 9, Colusa County, 7, Plumas County, 4, and Trinity County, 2. Fatalities across the region remain at 9. Gyms, bars, card rooms, movie theaters, bowling alleys, and more can reopen in Glenn County starting Friday as the county moves into Stage 3B of reopening. The announcement from the County Emergency Operations Center was released Thursday afternoon. Swimming pools, campgrounds, arcades, day camps, museums, and galleries are among other activities once again permitted. The order allows the county's Thunderhill Raceway and other racetracks to reopen, but bars spectators from attending events. Massage services, nail salons, tattoo parlors, overnight youth camps, fairs and festivals, music venues, and organized sports remain prohibited for now. As the legislature continues extending a moratorium on evictions due to the pandemic, regulators with the State Public Utilities Commission issued new rules that should keep the lights on for those in financial distress. The commission extended rules prohibiting utilities from disconnecting customers due to financial hardship through the end of the year. The commission also eliminated all connection and reconnection fees for four major investor-owned utilities, including Pacific Gas and Electric Company. Regulators also beefed up protections against disconnections for seniors and those eligible for discounted service due to medical conditions. Enough food to cook an estimated 50 million meals have been delivered to 30 food banks in 20 counties by California National Guard soldiers over the past 70 days, according to the Governor's Office of Emergency Services. The pandemic has left many community charities short-staffed as many retirees, ordinarily serving as volunteers, sought to reduce exposure risk as the outbreak got underway in March. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. For months, the novel coronavirus pandemic has turned downtown areas and North State communities into shadows of themselves. Now, as businesses and restaurants continue to reopen with restrictions, business owners are wondering how they can attract customers. In Chico, there's one idea the City and Downtown Chico Business Association have been working on to bolster business that could happen as early as next week: closing the streets to take indoor dining and events outside. NSPR's Andre Bayek spoke Thursday with Chris Constantine, Assistant City Manager for Chico, about the plan that's currently in the works.
So last night we presented to the council two proposals. First proposal was a unique street closure of downtown streets to allow restaurants and other businesses to be able to set out tables and hold the events in the streets, expanding the footprint of where people could actually sit. And the reason we recommended that program was to allow businesses that had been limited to 50% of their total space to garner more space to allow more residents to come and partake of their services.
Let's stay on that proposal. What would this look like? What's the vision for businesses and restaurants in the downtown?
So we've been working with the DCBA very closely now for more than 6 years. And so we've built a very strong partnership and understanding of the importance of downtown and the fabric of our Chico community. And so the vision is that we would close down streets from the Esplanade at First through 3rd and 4th Street, and then close the side streets from Salem until Main for the Thursday night market and some version of those streets for Friday and Saturday night to provide 3 nights where residents and visitors can come and enjoy food and music on the streets through those streets.
And when we say on the streets, is this dining on the streets? Is that what it would look like, or maybe something a little different?
It would be dining on the streets. In some cases, it would be cordoned off areas that would allow alcohol in front of certain restaurants.
I believe another part of this vision is an entertainment aspect, sort of cultivating a certain vibe downtown. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes. When you start to think of other locations in the U.S. and internationally, there are a lot of street fairs and open markets. Tavernas come to mind from visiting Athens, Greece, where you have music, tables, camaraderie, the opportunity to spend more time than a 50 or 60 minute meal. The music, the lighting, the sounds that you hear create such a vibe that it's an enjoyment activity. And so you tend to stay longer, enjoy it more, consume more food, and leaves you with an impression of just this cultural experience of what you're seeing here in our downtown. And that's what we're trying to replicate.
You mentioned that this could be implemented for 3 evenings, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I believe. For that Thursday, how could the market be incorporated into these plannings?
Well, the plan for the DCBA is to include some aspects of the farmers market into the street closures. And so the Thursday night market will look a little different than what it has for a number of years, but we believe in the way they are planning on laying it out, it could be very successful.
And by different, are there any examples you could give how it could be modified?
First, we would not be using the plaza. We would be using the streets areas for the Thursday night market. Secondly, external food vendors that are not downtown businesses at this point don't look that they would be included in the closure aspect of the downtowns. And the streets and restaurants that would be participating would be larger than the restaurants that you see participating during the typical Thursday night market.
And what has the reception from businesses been in the downtown to these plans that are in the works?
We received very positive reception from businesses. We met with some businesses in a meeting on Tuesday before our council meeting to get input on concerns, strengths, weaknesses, and opportunities that we could take advantage of. Clearly, there is not ever 100% consensus on one specific plan, but I believe business owners have been very diligent in providing input and understanding of the unique aspects of each of the restaurants and businesses that we could adjust plans to ensure that we maximize the win-win opportunity for all of them when the closures occur.
Of course, there are public health considerations to take into account here. How is the city approaching guidance for physical distancing, face coverings, and perhaps even large gatherings?
We will continue complying with the requirements of social distancing within the open space. Businesses are considering the requiring of masks within those areas. And the primary concern is obviously the health and safety of folks that come to the downtown. Secondary to that is the increasing of activity. But I believe given the large footprint, you can maintain the same type of spacing distances from inside the restaurants, external to the restaurants, giving the restaurant a 100% capacity, but over twice the size that they currently have in those restaurants. And I believe that is adequate to provide adequate safety to the public.
Logistically, getting people downtown, it seems most people would perhaps need to drive. How's the parking situation around the area that could be closed? What are the challenges there?
well, clearly there's never enough parking throughout the city for the high day demands. But in the downtown, we've evaluated the directions at which people drive into the downtown. There's five of them. The predominant one that's impacted is the southbound Esplanade towards Broadway, which will be closed, which would require those cars to go through the roundabout in Mount Salem. We believe in terms of traffic flow, it would be adequate to service the number of cars coming downtown. Now, since the core of the downtown will be closed, the parking garages, the parking lots become the primary locations for vehicles to park. The parking garage tends to have a lower utilization than parking spaces internally or the parking lots. We will still have the plaza area, the city hall parking lot after hours available for folks to be able to park. There is also work being done by the DCBA to coordinate the opportunity to allow easy access to bicycles to the downtown. And so some business owners have talked about investing in bicycle racks that they put throughout the downtown core to allow folks and encourage them to be sustainable and to come via bike instead of a vehicle.
You know, if all goes according to plan, when could the first of these street nights happen?
The DCBA's goal is to have the first one June 18th. That's the plan. We believe with the planning we're putting into place, we can meet that goal. And the hope is that we start with very successful events. It may be smaller than what the ultimate goal is in terms of footprint. And as we can see it being successful, expanding it to the full downtown core. And long-term, I believe that we will be very successful creating a vibe and an opportunity that's safe for the public to come downtown and to enjoy both music and food and access to the retail sale goods that are provided by those downtown businesses.
Is there anything I perhaps missed or didn't ask you about your planning for the downtown that you'd like to add or clarify?
At this point, we're working with the DCBA and the businesses and allowing the businesses and the DCBA to take the lead on the very specific aspects of the plan. As the city, we're focused on the requirements for street closures to do it safely, traffic flow, and ensuring that social distancing and other measures are adequate to protect the public. But I would hope that the public would get excited about this opportunity and come to the downtown and support those businesses, because they are going to see an impact not just from the pandemic that we've been experiencing, but also from the change in schedule at the university.
Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Andre.
That was Chris Constantine, Assistant City Manager for Chico, speaking with NSPR's Andre Bayek. You're listening to special coverage from North State Public Radio. Stay tuned. This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. A unique dilemma is facing people who live in Northern California communities that are also tourist destinations. While these places have not been hit hard by COVID, how do you reopen an economy when the source of your business will likely be from people traveling from places where there are many more cases of coronavirus and who could possibly bring it into your community? As part of a new rural reporting project in collaboration with CAP Radio, CAP Radio's Bob Moffitt reports on this sticky situation facing many Plumas and Sierra County business owners.
When you drive into Sierra County, a bright yellow sign blares in all caps, "Visitors kindly distance from our communities." A one-lane bridge crosses the North Yuba River in the town of Downeyville, which is in the middle of the Tahoe National Forest, about 110 miles north of Sacramento. It's lined with old brick and wood frame buildings. In the middle of town, Carl Butts is trying to figure out how to keep a mask on, carry on a conversation, and smoke a cigarette. A couple of locals are giving him a hard time.
It's over my nose. You know, it's always been just a fashion statement anyway.
He's kidding, but he and half the town of 200 are wearing them. He's 72 and at greater risk of infection. Butts publishes the Mountain Messenger, the oldest weekly paper in the state.
You know, people are frightened of getting it, of having people like yourself come up here. You know, outsiders.
One case could lead to others, and with a town the size of Downeyville, that could bring trouble for everyone.
Oh, that's the right key for this door.
And that's a quandary.
You know, we like the tourists. We live off that tourism. You know, at the same time, no one wants to get ill.
The thought of tourists sounds great to Jay and Gaylene Elliott. They just opened the Boomtown Lounge Wine and Beer Bar.
I like the chicken tamale. And a beer,
okay. We have two different beers.
Aileen says right now it's to-go orders only with a snack. Jay's still pulling the plastic off of some kind of packaging.
So we have a salami cheese olive cracker plate for five teeny-weeny bucks.
They feel like they're locals, but they still drive up every weekend from Sonoma County to work on their business. They have 100 masks from the county and don't want to be the source of an outbreak.
As soon as somebody walks up without a mask, or even if I see them going to the store next door without a mask, I just yell at them, "Would you like a mask?"
She didn't have to yell at Bob Maycomber. He and his wife Carol are wearing masks and keeping their distance, but that guard's coming down when their family gets here from Rockland and they head off to go camping.
When you get grandchildren, it's hard not to give them a hug.
He thinks both families have been responsible about social distancing.
There's no guarantees in life, but we're trying to not make any stupid decisions.
Up the road outside the town of Beckworth, Gary Romano opened the only farmer's market in Plumas County a couple of weeks early. Some of the vendors are from out of the area. Large white X's mark the spot where they set up, and arrows tell people what traffic pattern to follow.
And a vendor here.
He thinks it's safer than the store.
The grocery store, it seems like we have a lot of interaction. You're waiting in line at the checkout. You have no choice but to cross close path. Where here we have the option of open air. Nothing is handled by the customer.
At Leonard's IGA in Portola, Charles Scoville is standing on an X in the parking lot with a black print mask on his face. But he works at the Dollar General.
I've just been busy.
Is it busier these 2 months than it was last year? Sort of weird, isn't it? People are supposed to be staying home, but...
Nobody stays home. Nobody cares.
Normally, Jeffrey's Pub and Grub over in Quincy would also be busy and noisy.
Hi, how are you? Doing okay.
But today, you can hear every word of the conversation between the owner and her two customers. It's been only 4 days since the county allowed Anna Jeffrey to reopen. She says no matter what the health orders are, they won't please everyone.
There's always going to be somebody that's not happy with whatever we end up doing. I am all for the tourists coming back. I'm all for being a tourist again. I want to go places. I want people to be able to come here. So
whether it be Sierra or Plumas County, the masks have to come off at some point. The question is, what will happen when they do? Bob Moffitt, CAP Radio News.
Again, that story is part of a rural reporting project with our partner station, CAP Radio. If you are a Plumas or Sierra County resident, we'd love to hear from you about reopening businesses as the tourist season gets underway. Do you have concerns or suggestions about reopening? Let us know on our message line, 433-9216. Again, that's 433-9216. Today, we've focused a lot on how businesses are working through this pandemic. But what about public indoor spaces like libraries? How have they been serving the community through this crisis, and what are their plans for reopening in the future? NSPR's Matt Fidler recently spoke with Todd Deck, county librarian for Tehama County, about those questions. The first thing Matt asked was what the first move was for the libraries in Tehama County after they heard the news about the statewide stay-at-home order in March.
Well, it was interesting. There was so much information coming at us, I mean, hour by hour. And we got a notice from the American Library Association on March 17th recommending that libraries close. I was able to go to my board of supervisors that day and let them know what was going on. And they approved us closing at that point. So we closed on March 17th our doors.
So what did closing the library doors look like? Did you go from home? Did you not work at all?
So we, because we're a small staff and we have three libraries, we still reported to work initially, like through March. And during that time, we were really able to work and kind of catch up on projects. When we moved into our new building here, we just had 6 days to prepare for our opening. So we were really using it as a time to get things set up perfectly. Another thing we did, our Los Molinos Library, we got a $10,000 grant to update the furniture in there. So we spent a lot of time working in that little library, getting it beautiful. The other thing we did the day after we closed is we posted our very first Storytime online video. And that has grown to be a very popular medium for us reaching people. So we switched to a digital strategy pretty fast. We got around $5,000 in additional funds to purchase ebooks. So we were able to help drive people to that space for their reading materials. So it was a really quick transition.
So, about the ebooks. So have people been able to get ebooks from the library system this entire time?
People have been able to access ebooks and e-audiobooks through the library. The other interesting thing we did is we were able to use a service where patrons could get a virtual library card just for ebooks from home, where they entered in their zip code and their phone number. And so that way they were able to access our ebook collection without coming in and us verifying their address or anything like that. So that has been very popular because a lot of people, you know, wanted to access it, but we couldn't verify their information in person. So that was really a very helpful tool for us.
You also mentioned that you're posting videos. What kind of videos are you posting?
We are posting videos on story times, songs. We are doing, we have a law library here, so we're doing tutorials on how to utilize our law library. We have videos on digitization of your family memorabilia, videos on how to use our services in general. We are doing a, like, choose your own adventure read along. And then our entire summer reading program, which is normally the library's kind of main focus. Summer reading is a really big deal for librarians, rightfully so. We're doing that entirely online, and all of our content is going to be through digital videos.
Very cool. Well, how do you access these videos and the other services that you're providing?
So the best way to go is www.tehamacountylibrary.org and click on Kids and Families. That will give you all of the information on our summer reading endeavors this year, and it's really the hub for all of our information.
So a lot of retail shops are providing curbside pickup now. What about the libraries?
So the library started curbside about a month ago, and you can request your books online or over the phone. And what we will do is we will bring them either to the hood of your car, we will really do curbside, or we'll leave them on a little table outside of the library. So it's a completely socially distanced service.
Now, do you know if other libraries, like the Shasta County Library System, the Butte County Library System, are other library systems in the North State also providing curbside pickup? Do you know?
Yes, I do believe the majority of libraries in the North State are doing some version of curbside and also have amazing ebook resources available to their patrons. Their best bet for them to find that information is to go to their local library's website and get the information on that. But it's a fantastic service.
Do you have any sort of timeline when you're going to reopen with normal in-person hours?
I am optimistic that the Tehama County Library will hopefully reopen its doors in a limited capacity by the end of this month.
You mentioned earlier, when we talked earlier, about a free lunch service for children at the library with games. And can you tell me a little bit about that?
So the Lunch at the Library program is a program through the California State Library, and it's exactly how it sounds. It's Lunch at the Library. Originally, our plan was to incorporate that service into our summer reading program. But of course, with closures and gatherings being discouraged, we're not able to do that. But what we are doing is every Wednesday morning at 11 a.m., you can come to the Red Bluff Library and drive through, and we will provide lunch to you and your children. And we also have tons of fun kind of socially distanced activities planned for Lunch at the Library. We have a giant Connect Four that you can play from the comfort of your car. We have an obstacle course where kids can run through and get some exercise. We have different community partners that are helping us keep each kind of drive-through experience really interesting. Our local landfill is going to be handing out information. Our First Five Tehama group handed out free books to kids last week. We have public health coming, so it's really a great way for us to just see our patrons again and engage with them the best way we can right now, and then also provide healthy meals for young people in the area, and then also encourage reading and reminding them that the library is here, maybe just in a little bit of a different way.
Is there anything else that you want NSPR listeners to know about the library system during this kind of strange time we're all experiencing?
You know, it's a very strange time. We talked a little bit ago about how you really want to read more because you're spending more time at home. And I think that's a very real thing right now. And reading is a really important way to help manage stress and depression in your life. And so libraries are more important than ever before. We are still here for the North State, just in a little bit of a different way. So really reach out to your local libraries, and I'm sure they're going to find some way to help meet your needs.
That was Todd Deck, County Librarian for Tehama County, speaking with NSPR's Matt Fidler. Before we end this program, I wanted to highlight one thing Todd Deck said at the end of that conversation. It was that reading is a really important way to help manage stress and depression in your life. I just wanted to note that taking care of your mental health is really important, especially right now. This is not an easy time. Whether you already have techniques like reading that you're using, or if you need a few more, we've put together a wide-ranging list of mental health resources that include general advice to help if you're feeling stressed, anxious, or overwhelmed, hotlines you can call, and links to every county behavioral health department in our region. So if you feel like you could use a little help, please don't hesitate to check it out. You can find it on our website, mynspr.org. And that is your program. As always, if you have thoughts for us, leave them on our message line, 433-9216. You can also go to our website. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, Angel Haracha, Eric Radaville, Kylo Castilla, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, news director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in each weekday evening at 6:30 or catch the rebroadcast the following morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and take care of yourself and others.